Acorns are dropping off my Chinese house. Two ducks in my spyglass, fiery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine.
Welcome to Yarns at Yin Hu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 104, Head, Hands, and Heart. Sunday, January 3rd, 2016. I'm your host, Sarah. You can find me on social media as Sarah Pomegranate. The Yarns at Yin Hu podcast has a Facebook page, and it's available on iTunes. I also include links and photographs to the things I talk about each week on my website, yarnsatyinhu.com. Today's episode includes the following segments: the back porch, the front porch, chin wagon, ever-expanding skill set, and so forth. Happy New Year, and thank you for joining me today. Thanks to everyone who was eager to support me and provide ideas, suggestions, and pattern links for my sock knitting. I'm pleased to report that I have completed the Christmas Day cast-on socks. I received the gift of signature U.S. size 1 needles for Christmas, and on Christmas Day, I cast on a pair of the Susan B. Anderson How I Knit My Socks with an Indulgence 6-ply yarn in some Christmassy colors. The Indulgence 6-ply is almost a sport weight yarn, and probably I should have cast on fewer stitches, but I cast on 56 stitches, and instead of following Susan B. Anderson's very vanilla kind of stockinette in the round pattern, I knit the cuff in 1x1 rib, and after about an inch and a half or so, I transitioned to a 3x1 rib for the leg, and I continued that down across the instep or the top of the foot. I use Susan B. Anderson's very traditional heel flap, heel turn, and gusset, as well as the toe closure she recommends, and Kitchener, the toe closed at the bottom of the foot. I have a pretty decent pair of socks. These are still not as snug or as elastic feeling as I would like them to be. Probably I could have cast on 52 or maybe even 48 stitches with this yarn, but I didn't realize it. What I enjoyed about the sock knitting, I very much enjoyed using the signature double pointed needles. I felt that there was a lot of control. And previously I had been using US size 1.5 needles. And I think because of the way that I knit, that the ones really are more appropriate for me. I enjoyed doing a tubular cast on with the 1x1 rib. I enjoy knitting ribbing for the entire length of the leg. I liked the magic of the heel turn, and I liked doing the gusset. I don't mind picking up stitches, and I didn't have any holes in the heel of the sock that I needed to close up later. It was very snug fitting there. And I enjoy the Kitchener stitch at the end as well. Overall, I did not find the fit of the sock to be as snug as I wanted, and I don't care for the bulky texture of the heel flap. I didn't mind knitting it, but it just, I don't know, it seemed a little dense and a little uncomfortable in the heel flap area. And that could be because I was using such thick yarn. I don't know. So I am already working on a second pair of socks. They are socks I began last year for Valentine's Day in a yarn called Flying Saucer yarn. It's from Chappelle Vola, and it's called Fliegende Untertasse, Flying Saucer. This yarn comes in really vibrant, sort of wild colors, and it's known for its pooling effect. So there are sort of swirls and pools all around the leg and the foot as you knit. I cast on 64 stitches on US size 1.5. I was knitting these 2 at a time on like a 40-inch circular needle, but I have removed one of the socks and put them on the US size 1 needles. And the entire cuff and leg is continuous, and it's knit in 2x2 rib. So I had about 7 or 8 inches of that. And now I'm just removing them to do the heel and the foot and finish each sock. For these socks, I am going to try the strong heel. I was given the suggestion by Joanna Spring to try a Flegel heel. And I have done one of these in the past, but the directions I could find were geared toward a toe-up sock, and I've already started these, and they're cuffed down. So I thought I would try a strong heel. It was suggested somewhere that this is a similar heel to a Flegel, but you can do it with a cuffed-down sock. So I will give that a try, and I will also try some sort of different toe for this sock. I have a book with some suggestions, and I received numerous links with suggestions, and I welcome additional suggestions because this year will be the year of the sock, I think, for me. I would like to find the formula that I really like for socks. And until I find that, I will just probably knit socks and give them away because if I don't love them, I'm not going to keep them. I already have a few that I've knit in the past and I've kept. So I'll just keep experimenting. I don't necessarily think I will knit a lot of pairs of socks, but I would like to keep working on them until I find a combination of cuff, leg, heel, and toe that I really like. And it may be that I prefer toe-up socks. So I think my next pair will definitely be toe-up, and I will try that Flegel heel. So I thought I'd talk a little bit about goals. This seems to be, you know, the traditional time of year to review goals from the past and to set new ones. I tend to be the kind of person who makes a list of goals and then just sets it aside and doesn't really refer to it so much. I think the things that really matter to me end up sticking in my head and the other things sort of fall to the wayside. So I found in my journal in episode 65 that I had set some goals for myself for 2015, and they were to knit 2 sweaters, which I have been successful in doing, to learn to knit brioche, which I did learn. I understand the pattern, and I have knit exactly 1 brioche hat, to spin 3 and 4 ply yarns, which I was working on initially, but most of my spinning ended up being for the sheep to shawl class, and I stuck with 2 ply yarns for that course. So I didn't make a lot of headway with that goal. I wanted to do more embroidery, and I did quite a bit of embroidery, especially at the beginning of the year. On Christmas, I gave 5 embroidered ornaments to family members, and I had embroidered some beautiful chickens and an owl, and then I embroidered some colloquial sayings for my brother-in-law and my sister's boyfriend. And I had completed those last winter, and they're on the teeny tiniest size of embroidery hoop, and I just sort of made them into ornaments. So that was a lot of fun, and I would like to continue my embroidery practice. Another thing I did was to embroider a design on a homemade handbag that I used all year long. And I have this other bag, the multitasker tote I made, which is really begging for an embroidered emblem on the front. And I have an idea of what I would like to do. I just have to get working on embroidering that bag. I also wanted to extend my meditative spindling practice. I did very well with that, particularly in the summer when I would do a meditative spindling session on my porch each morning. But since the fall, that has fallen by the wayside, and I would really like to renew that goal. So aside from the sock investigation and the quest for socks, I would like to have a much more balanced and contemplative year. And I would like to deepen my meditative spindling practice so that I'm doing it once a day. And I think that this will work nicely with a theme of balance that I have for the year. In yoga class a few weeks ago, we worked on a number of balancing postures. And I remember thinking as we were doing them that this is what I need. I need more balance. I need to work on this. And so I think balance is an ideal focal point for the year. And a daily spindling practice is a logical extension of that. And this will also coincide nicely with reading my subscription to Taproot magazine and this trifold theme of head, hands, and heart. I would also like to continue with a few things that I was working on last year because they remain important to me. So my embroidery, I would like to continue. I am currently reading The Subversive Stitch. It's a very scholarly work that was mentioned by Rebecca Ringquist in one of the interviews I heard. And she had started her work in embroidery because of reading this book in one of her sort of like a feminist theory of art class in grad school or something like that. And it is quite dense and scholarly, but I'm enjoying the slow, methodical reading of The Subversive Stitch. Perhaps I'll share some of that with you in a future episode. I would like to continue with brioche and knit a brioche project, at least one this year. And I would like to continue with my plan of a handmade wardrobe. Last year, I received a sewing machine for Christmas, and I set a sort of long-term 5-year goal of having a mostly handmade wardrobe. And this year, I have made great strides, even though it wasn't in the goals that I mentioned. It was sort of just a more abstract concept, I suppose. I have made some great strides in my progress toward a handmade wardrobe. My practice seems to be to find a pattern and sew it many times and making small adjustments as I go and as I gain confidence. So I think I will continue with that. Primarily, I have made dresses so far, but I'm starting to branch out a little bit with other pieces. And I would like to think a little bit more about how my knitting and sewing can go together. So if I sew something, what would I knit to go with that piece? Or choosing to make pieces in a kind of a color family that will work as coordinates. So instead of just having one-off pieces of things that I have made. I actually do have a wardrobe of things that go together. And that takes a lot of thoughtful planning, and it requires resistance to just impulse purchases and impulse cast-ons, because it, you know, oh wow, that looks cool. Well, you know, how does it work with things I already have? So I think this year I'll be a little more considered in my choices and work on things a little bit more in color families or make stylistic choices of some kind. I'd also like to continue with the ever-expanding skill set that I've been working on, and that's primarily with culinary skills. This past year, hashtag Power Pantry was an exploration of how to make my pantry more effective, more cost-effective, and make my kitchen a lot more fun, a better place to cook and to experiment and improvise. So I received a few suggestions about how to incorporate local and seasonal produce into my culinary endeavors. I'm really pleased that Yarns at Yinhu has listeners from all over the globe, and that means local is different to each of us, and seasonal can be very different as well. So I thought that I'd continue hashtag Power Pantry in 2016, but that what I would do is have an ingredient of the month. And if you like, if it works for you, you can cook along with my ingredient of the month. In January, it's potatoes. Or you can feel free to choose your own ingredient of the month. And this might be produce, or it might be, it could be a condiment like mustard. It could be a spice like cumin. It could be ingredient of the month is leftovers. You know, what am I doing with leftovers? And the thread will be open to any sort of conversation you'd like to have about my chosen ingredient or the one that you have selected. And this will enable folks, if they really want to make seasonal or local produce a focus, you can certainly do that. And I will be very interested in hearing about what you select. And I'll be posting links and recipes and commenting on the thread, and I will open a new thread for each month, but those threads are never closed, so you can always join in at any time. Samuel and I have begun expanding our skill set with potatoes this month. I was challenged with a couple of different varieties of leftovers. We serve a Christmas Eve open house with lots of different meats, cheeses, hors d'oeuvres, appetizers, that kind of thing. And we had some duck breast that I really wanted to do something with, but there wasn't a lot. And I just kept turning it over in my mind what we could do. And then we also turned out we had some leftover scalloped potatoes from our family Christmas dinner. And so I came up with the idea of making these pasties. So I made a single pie crust recipe, my typical butter crust. And then we cut out very large rounds of the pie dough and then put duck and potatoes and then a mixture of sauteed onions and carrots, which are, you know, staples in my pantry, as well as some frozen peas, which I also like to have on hand. So we sauteed those up just to cook the onion and carrot through. And so we put about a tablespoon and a half of this mixture on top of each of the pastry rounds. And then we used an egg wash to seal a top round and to brush the top so that it would brown nicely in the oven. So we had all of these little pockets. It was delicious. It was an absolutely delicious meal. I baked them in the oven on 350, similar to the way I would bake a pie. All of the ingredients inside were already cooked, so It was just a matter of warming them up. When the tops looked nicely browned, I took them out and we enjoyed them. So that was some great improvisation. And then another day we made some potato leek soup using a recipe from the Irish Pub cookbook. And for this, I was able to incorporate the wonderful turkey stock that I had made after our Thanksgiving dinner. I think the recipe calls for some vegetable stock or chicken stock, and I decided to use the turkey instead. I left the skin on our potatoes because this whole soup is processed in a blender to make it smooth. So when those are the directions, I usually leave the skin on my potatoes. And it was really delicious. And we paired that with some biscuits. The cast iron skillet, or the, I guess it's called the new cast iron skillet cookbook, has a recipe for some stew with biscuits or dumplings on the top. So I used that biscuit recipe. And instead of the cheddar that they called for, we just used a variety of cheeses and bits of cheese that were left over from our open house. And then we also had, I'm not even sure what we ended up using. We had some different salamis and hams and things that we had out. So we made a very, very fine dice of some of the meat, and I incorporated that also in the biscuit, as well as some fresh herbs. And that was a really delicious and hearty meal. And I have linked to both of those cookbooks that I mentioned in the show notes, which are on my website, yarns@yinhu.com. The front porch. Sometime this week, I will be casting on a few new projects. I have been interested in knitting a pattern called Flaum by Justina Larkowska. Mary Beth wore a beautiful camel version of this sweater to Rhinebeck, and I really admired it. So I have some wool alpaca blend yarn in a beautiful deep red color for this pattern, and I'm very much looking forward to knitting that. I've also been thinking about which pattern I'd like to knit with some beautiful local yarn. I have about 600 yards of a DK to worsted weight yarn in a beautiful rich brown color in lovely Shetland wool that's local to me. I think it's from Bucks County, Pennsylvania, which isn't far away. And I've been thinking about some different patterns and what I would like to make, something versatile and something beautiful, of course. And one idea I have is to knit a pattern for a scarf called Avalon Ballroom. It's in issue 15 of Pom Pom Quarterly, and it looks absolutely beautiful. It's very lacy, but it's designed for a DK or a worsted weight yarn. Something else that's much more simple and modern is the Shrowl design by Stephen West. And this is a very long cowl, but you can do some stitching closed of the cowl, and then it turns into a shrug. So I thought that would be quite versatile, and it would also go well with one of the recent dresses that I just finished sewing. And then I also thought about incorporating other colors with this beautiful brown yarn, and I could either use some scraps that I have, or I could use some additional yarn in my stash and maybe go back to this idea of the dotted rays shawl and do something with some color changes and make this rustic yarn look a little more contemporary by adding some color to it. So I have not come to a decision or anywhere close to a decision on those, but I've been turning it over in my mind. As for sewing, this long holiday break has afforded me the opportunity to spend several days working on sewing projects, and I have completed another version of the Pearl Dress by Green Bee Patterns. The first time I knit this pattern, I used some flannel. This flannel is beautiful. Beautiful teal and brown with some gold shots through it in a big flannel pattern. But it was more suited for flannel pajamas than really a flannel garment. It was incredibly thick. And one of the distinguishing features of this pearl dress is a placket front, which is supposed to have buttons. So I could barely get my machine to plow through the triple and quadruple thickness of this placket, and it doesn't need buttons. It's just sort of a V neck, and that's fine. It is very comfortable. I wore this dress on Christmas Day, and it's great with some tights and some boots. There is also an unfortunate pleat in the front because I had a lot of difficulty transferring the markings on the flannel. And I think I snipped too far when I was making the opening for the placket, and then I just couldn't bring it all together without putting a tuck in the fabric. So for the second version, I used a quilting cotton. It's a beautiful feather pattern in Anna Maria Horner's field study collection. And the background is, or the ground, I should say, is a chocolatey brown. And the feathers are a very vibrant teal or aqua color. And I really like this fabric. I think it's much more suitable for the pattern. And I was able to transfer the markings, although it took me a long time to feel like I had transferred the markings in a straight and even fashion. The placket did come together as written, and as I was doing it this time, I could see where I had made my mistake and snipped too far into the flannel and the previous version. So this is lovely. I didn't realize that I had purchased this fabric to make a different dress. So I didn't have enough for the long sleeves. What I ended up doing was making a shorter sleeve, but then putting a kind of cuff on the bottom. So I improvised that myself, and these are now 3/4 length sleeves, which I'm very happy with. I also worked on slimming down the skirt portion of the dress because I thought the top fit quite well. It was almost snug, which was fine. I tend to have very broad shoulders for smaller sized dresses. But I didn't make any adjustments to the shoulders or the top of the dress, but I did slim down the skirt of the dress. I kept the pockets, and let me think if I did anything else. I made, I think, a better effort with the bust darts on this one. I find it very difficult to get bust darts even. It always turns out that one side is a little bit different from another. I don't think it's something you can tell when you're wearing the dress, but certainly when I'm ironing it after sewing, I notice that there are subtle differences to the way I do things. So I put a lot of attention in making the bust darts even on this dress. And I think it came out very well. I have not yet put in the buttonholes or buttons, and I think I will seek my mom's assistance in doing that for the first time. And I haven't made any selection of buttons. So that's the Pearl Dress by Green Bee Patterns. I also used a tutorial series on Creative Bug to draft and sew an A-line skirt with an invisible zip. This series is hosted on Creative Bug by Cal Patch. I really like her manner of teaching, and I like how thorough she is with different tips about sewing along the way. So I successfully drafted a pattern for my own A-line skirt using my own measurements and drawing everything out. And then I used some really beautiful Stonehenge fabric. It has a little bit of a sheen to it to sew this skirt, and I really like it. I think in the future I would like to learn how to put a lining inside skirts because it is a little bit difficult to wear this skirt with tights. The cotton fabric of the hem wants to creep up when it rubs against the fabric of my tights. Maybe a satin, a single fold bias tape in something slippery or satiny would solve that problem. And instead of making a double fold hem, I would just use the single fold bias tape to close the hem. That might be useful, although all of the bias tape that I've ever seen is not shiny or satiny. So I guess I would have to source some other product in order to do that. Or I could learn how to put a lining in things. But I'm thinking that this would require having some sort of synthetic fabric. And that's something I'm really trying to stay away from in my sewing. Those acetate linings, they work beautifully because they keep fabrics from snagging against each other when you wear the garment. But I guess it's not an entirely natural sort of way to make your clothing. And I've been trying to concentrate on natural fibers for the garments. So it's something to continue thinking about. This skirt sits a little bit low on my waist. I took a lower waist measurement, but I think I could have moved that measurement up a little bit. However, I was very excited to just try out this skirt and purchased fabric and used it for the project without washing it. So it could be that upon washing, this fabric will shrink up just a little bit and it will sit higher on my waist. So that's something I'll have to consider. I do plan on making this skirt again, making adjustments and making it again. And I will use it on some pre-washed fabric for sure the next time I make it. And that means that I will need to make some adjustments for a little bit narrower waist. I also need to work on my sewing in a zipper skills. The zipper looks fine when I'm wearing the skirt, but upon close examination, there are some hideous looking stitches. So that's a skill set that I can continue to improve. Thank you for joining me today. I wish you all a very happy and healthy 2016.
Acorns are dropping off my Jenny's house. Two ducks in my spyglass, fiery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Leaves her down like a lady, waiting for a naked man. riverbends like an elbow, turning stone to sand. It's a survey nature thing. Yes, a survey nature thing. Yes, a mighty fine nature thing. Yes, a mighty fine nature thing. Sycamore trees are blazing like a rainbow fire, just like Lena Kurtz sings, but out on a wire. It's a survey nature thing. It's a survey nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
Thanks for listening. Music for this episode is Sweet. Music and lyrics by Samuel St. Thomas, performed by Krista Long and Cesar Diaz. If you enjoyed today's episode, I hope you will consider liking the show's Facebook page, joining the Yarns at Yinhu group on Ravelry, or leaving a star rating or a review on iTunes. Eat well and stay strong as you hone your post-apocalyptic skill set this week.
Nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.